Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. The award-winning world of Justified returns to FX tomorrow night as miniseries Justified City Primeval. Executive producer and showrunner Michael Dinner joins me next in an internet radio exclusive live from Ireland. What is the Independent Streaming Alliance out to do for independent channel makers reaching you through smart TV products and multi-channel bundles? We'll learn next half hour from Reverie co-founder and chief executive Damian Coscione. And one of the newest indie channel undertakings is PowerTube Television, an auto-centric service launching last week. Chief executive Byron Bassoni details all next hour. Also ahead, Tubi's new CEO, our new classic trivia question, and time to get the guilds dealing again at the bargaining table. I'll comment. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, simulcasting live from New York on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio, and presenting the iHeartRadio Podcast Network, Spotify, Apple and Google Podcasts, and other leading podcast destinations. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. 88 degrees at the top of the hour here in New York, and on this Monday afternoon, we welcome you to the program all about TV's current and future. 90-minute plus edition coming your way. Happy you're with us. We got some wonderful guests coming away from all over the place in the half hour, I should say hour and a half plus ahead, and we want you to be part of the program. It's so simple. If you just pick up the phone, dial in, and when you do, you use this number, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is good anyway. You're catching us across the country or around the globe here on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, TuneIn Radio. And we've got our chat room already in business. Rick Webb, our super fan from Philadelphia, just got into the room, and you can join him at SimonApple04 by name. That's the chat room. You'll find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. And while the program is on the air, you can connect others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon, your Blog Talk Radio speaker tune screen, follow the instruction, other people meet live with you. Michael Dinner from Justified, City Primeval, which begins tomorrow night on FX, will join us live from west of Ireland after these news notes. Tubi, Fox's multi-channel bundle, has a new leader at the top. Anjali Sud, that's Vimeo's overseer since 2017, received the call to be Tubi's chief executive officer this morning. Sud, that's S-U-D, Sud, will start her Tubi role September 1st. Prior to Vimeo, Sud was employed at Amazon and Time Warner in various capacities. At the moment, Tubi has more than 64 million users a month and a catalog of 50,000 titles, in addition to numerous TV networks. In a statement, Sud declared that there's, and I quote, a seismic shift in where and how content will be consumed, unquote. Her goal, make Tubi, again a quote, the destination for the next generation of audiences. Now quickies, Netflix will produce a documentary miniseries on the U.S. Women's World Cup soccer team. The miniseries will run later this fall following the Women's World Cup, which starts Thursday morning U.S. time on Fox Sports and also on Telemundo and Universo in Spanish. One more sports tidbit. HBO's annual Hard Knocks series returns August 8th. The NFL team under the microscope this time, the J-E-T-S, Jets, the New York Jets with Aaron Rodgers as their new main quarterback. Prime Video's second season of Lord of the Rings finished filming hours before the actors' strike started last week. The Chosen, whose broadcast TV run started last night in the CW, will stay in production on its fourth season. A production team received a waiver from SAG-AFTRA to keep participating actors on the set. And Los 50, that's Lota 50, that's Telemundo's latest move in a two-hour nightly unscripted Spanish-language series, begins tomorrow night, 7 p.m. Eastern and Pacific time. And that is news notes for today. And now joining us live in an internet radio exclusive direct from west of Ireland, the prolific episodic TV producer, director, executive producer, showrunner, co-writer, and director of Justified, City Primeval, beginning tomorrow night at 10 p.m. Eastern Pacific on FX, Michael Dinner. Michael, welcome in.
Hi, nice to talk to you.
And same here, Michael. I have to say, the raves are coming in fast and furious, so to speak, for your series. Hollywood Reporter late last week said that your program can stand on its own 2 feet when compared to the original long-running FX series. And a couple of hours ago, Variety said that they were just over the moon with what you and your production team have done.
Well, it's gratifying. I mean, look, we did a show. We finished the show some years ago. We thought we stuck the landing, and it kind of weighed back in. We never saw this as kind of a reboot of the show. We kind of saw it as taking a character we loved and combining him with another Elmore Leonard piece. And the fact that people are responding and they seem to get it, so it's really gratifying.
Was that the goal all along, to layer the principal justified character played so beautifully by Timothy Olyphant, who, by the way, is also an executive producer on this updated series, to layer the original character and the motif of the program with the Elmore Leonard City Primeval novel?
Well, you know, this started some years ago. I was actually approached about turning, after we finished Justified, turning City Primeval into its own series. And I was, you know, working on that and starting to write. And Tim had called me. I was shooting something in Italy. And he said, you know, I was talking to Quentin on the set, and we were saying that, you know, City Primeval. I go, yeah. He said, well, you know, we were talking that it would make a great year at Justified. So I think he'd heard that I was about to, you know, start work on this. And, you know, we talked a little bit about it, and it actually took a couple of years to get it off the ground because the rights situation was, it was a difficult situation to clear the rights. But, you know, we had this idea to, like I said, not do a reboot, but to kind of do a mashup between this novel that we really loved and the show that we loved doing. And, like I said, it wasn't so much to revisit the past, but to revisit the feeling we had doing the show before.
Mm-hmm. How did you and Timothy want to update the character of Raylan Givens, who was so memorable in Justified?
Well, in some ways, you know, we kind of felt that Justified was the first act in this character's life, and that it was possible to do the second act, that there's actually, you know, an existential story to be told. I mean, he's now 10 years, you know, further along in his life. He's a few years away from mandatory retirement with the Marshal Service. He has a daughter who's 15 going on 16, and in a couple of years she'll be emancipated. The daughter that he thinks he's been a great father to, and he's actually been, you know, there half the time. I mean, he has custody arrangement. He sees her twice a month. And sometimes even in those twice-a-month visits, he doesn't get to see her. So, you know, in a way, we pick up a character where we like to say that the road in front of him is a lot shorter than the road behind. And we felt there was a story to be told, not just to recapture the mood that we had doing this show, but there was kind of a character piece to be told about someone in the second act of their life, of this character. So that's how it started, and I feel really good about what we did in terms of that.
There's also a little bit of fish out of water, because in Justified, the character is in a rural area. Now he is, first of all, he's stationed, when we find him first tomorrow night in Miami, and now he's going to Detroit to deal with this crime.
Right. Well, we saw him at the beginning of Justified. He was a U.S. Marshal in Miami, and then he was sent to Kentucky. And then at the end of, you know, our run, he went back to Miami again. But, it was fun to put him in a different environment. That first act of his life is kind of the story about you can't go home again. And this is a different story. So it was fun to put him in that environment, to see him as a fish out of water, to introduce new characters who we think are pretty, you know, vivid characters, and to raise the stakes.
Mm-hmm. We're speaking with Michael Dinner. He is the executive producer, showrunner, also co-writer and director of the new FX miniseries Justified, City Primeval, starring Timothy Olyphant in the return to his particular character of that Peabody Award-winning series Justified, Raylan Givens. Now stationed in Miami, he moves to Detroit to solve a crime, and he's got a very interesting cast of characters to work with. We'll talk about that shortly. Michael joins us live from west of Ireland this half hour. Internet Radio exclusive interview coming your way on tomorrow will be televised. Tom Nab, I'm with you live from New York, where it's 88 degrees, hot and humid, and in some areas of the city, it is 90 degrees or above. Wherever you are, we are happy you're with us. Stick around and give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. First of three episodes we're doing this week, we'll be with you also on Thursday and Friday. And coming your way on Friday, you'll meet somebody who has already produced a series in search of a service to run it on. The series is called Mother, May I Have a Kidney? You'll meet creator, writer, and executive producer Veronica Reyes Howe. That's Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Michael, in this particular project, a lot of people know you more as an episodic producer-director. In this case, you're showrunning, you're an executive producer, and you've also co-written the first two episodes and the last two episodes with Dave Andrus, who we all know for his wonderful work on another FX long-running series, Snowfall, with the late, great producer-director John Singleton. So what was it like working with Dave and putting this miniseries together.
Well, I love working with Dave. We had a great time with each other. And look, there were, you know, 8 of us in the writer's room. 6 had been on the show together before. So we, you know, we had a great time during the 6 or 7 years doing the series. We also added Walter Mosley and Issa Davis to the, you know, the writing team. But Dave was really generous, and we had a great time. We laughed a lot, and, it was really a great experience.
And let's not forget Graham Yost, who was also an original executive producer. He won the Peabody Award for Justified's first season. In addition, we also had him on the program now for Justified for another FX series, The Bridge, which he did for 2 years. What was it like re-teaming with him for this?
Well, you know, my experience with Graham has been great over the years. I'm actually doing another show with him right now in London called Silo for Apple. But we've had a great time working with each other, and it's kind of like a marriage at this point, you know. And Graham was in an Apple deal, so he couldn't be on City Primeval full time, but he would come into the room, you know, once a week, and he would give us notes, and it was great having him there.
What was it like doing Silo? That has gotten rave reviews. A lot of people are praising the production design, the fact that you had this unique society that is buried so far underground with, 10,000 people in it, and they're trying to figure out
right.
whether this dystopian society is actually for real or not.
Well, it's a lot of fun shooting it here in London, it's a great cast. You know, Rebecca Ferguson, Tim Robbins, Steve Zahn is joining us this year. And the scripts are great, and, it's an opportunity to tell this, you know, this dystopian story, you know, 300 years in the future, and it's a very interesting project.
How fast did Timothy Oliphant get back into his character and start to look at how different or how far he's come as a human being in this miniseries, as the miniseries goes along?
Well, I think it was easy for him to slip back into it. I mean, you know, Tim's, you know, a few years older than he was when we did the show, and his character's a few years older than his character was when we finished the show. It was, like I said, it was kind of a joy to be able to get back in Elmore's world, to get back in Elmore Leonard's world and tell stories like this, and totally to do a story like this. It's something that Tim understands really well, and that we all enjoy doing. But I think that there's something in this piece, in the 8 episodes, that speaks to Tim, speaks to myself, speaks to Dave, and speaks to everybody that worked on it. Like I said, seeing that the road's a little shorter than the road behind, I think it's something that everyone can relate to. And I think it was also fun for him because, you know, in the piece we see his daughter, who's 15 going on 16. That character was played by his real-life daughter. It was interesting to see the two of them work together. I think that was kind of a joy for him because at times he would be actor to actor with her. At times he would be executive producer to actor with her. And sometimes he would be dad. There would be times where he would start to say, well, why don't you try? I got this. You have to tell me. So it was really kind of cute to see their relationship. And I think that he was able to use that within the piece itself. And I think there was a shorthand between the two of them, which was really good.
Is that a very interesting dynamic to see him play that, a father-daughter relationship both in the role and then off the role? And off the role, did he do a lot of coaching with his daughter?
Well, he would try to coach, but she would shut him down. So she's very much, her father's daughter, you know. It was great to see them work together. He was very generous with her, and she was great with him. And I think that actually the fact that there was, this relationship that pre-exists, you know, in real life that exists, I think was a really good thing for the show and really something to play on.
Mm-hmm. Everyone who knows Justified remembers the incredible performance of Walton Goggins as sort of Rainer's key enemy for the life of the show. You have another person in that sort of character, and he's getting rave reviews for it.
Right. Well, the baddie, if you want to call him that, is Boyd Holbrook, who plays Clement Mansell, the Oklahoma Wild man. And I think he's, you look, the protagonist is only as strong as his antagonist. I think, you know, this character and this actor is, you know, great, very formidable against, you know, Tim and Raylan. And in some ways, Boyd Crowder, you know, he was cut from the same cloth as Raylan. You know, as we said several times in the show, you know, when they were 18, they mined coal together. So there's a familiarity between the two. They understand each other. They understand their moves. They get each other. But I think what makes Clement, you know, Boyd Holbrook's character so dangerous is that he's this nihilist who is unpredictable. And as Raylan has gotten a little older in his life, and you know, I think that this guy is scarier in a way because, you know, Boyd Crowder had kind of an amoral pope that has nothing. Mm. And so I think it makes him very formidable and a little scary.
You have a number of very notable people in the cast among the two people we just mentioned. And one of them is the wonderful actress Anjanou Ellis. We remember her from Book of Numbers on BET. She's done some Emmy-nominated performances before. What role does she play here in City Primeval?
Well, there's a lot of great characters in this piece, but essentially it's a three-hander between Raylan and Anjanou's character, Carolyn Wilder, and Clement Mansell. So, you know, some years before, Carolyn Wilder was the defense attorney, kind of blackmailed into being, was a defense attorney for Clement out of, she did it as a favor, really. And as Clement comes back into Detroit now, she's kind of blackmailed into representing him again. So it's a three-hander, and when American Crime Fiction, I think, is working on all cylinders, you have a feeling that the characters are on a collision course, whether you want to call it the hand of God or the forces, whatever it is, they're maneuvering these characters together. And you have a feeling some, if not all, of these characters won't be standing at the end of it. So she plays this really formidable character who's his defense attorney, who kind of goes toe-to-toe with Raylan, but also there's a spark between the two of them. And I think there's a really interesting dynamic.
Mm. Two other actors I want to note are two that have Broadway backgrounds. One is Vondi Curtis Hall. I believe he plays a bar owner. And he's getting ready. He got the rave review from Variety in the review I just mentioned earlier. The other is Norbert Leo Butz. A lot of folks who are Broadway musical fans know him as playing opposite John Lithgow in Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, the musical version of that film. But he's done a lot of other work as well, both in theater and in television. And again, I understand he plays one of the deputies that Oliphant's character works with.
Right, right. Well, I think across the board, the actors are terrific in this. So let's talk a little bit about Vondi's character. So Vondi plays a character by the name of Sweetie. And, you know, Detroit's a character in this piece, and Sweetie kind of represents Detroit. Sweetie is a former musician, was a monster bass player. In my head, you know, I was a former musician. He reminds me of, in my head, he was kind of patterned after James Jamerson, who was the great bass player, played in all the Motown sessions in Detroit. And so Sweetie was a monster bass player who did a few bad things in his life. And, you know, he's the kind of character who, kind of musician who could have gone to Los Angeles or New York or Nashville or Memphis, but he didn't. He stayed here, got in some trouble, ended up buying a bar. And as he says later on in the piece, you know, he wanted to play the music he wants to play in this bar, and he wanted to serve the people he wanted to serve. So he's really the heart of Detroit in a way, and he has a relationship also. He was kind of, we call him the shirt-tail uncle to Anjanou's character, Carolyn. But he's kind of the heart and soul of this piece and the heart and soul of Detroit. Norbert, you know, plays one of the Detroit cops, also Marin Ireland, another, stage actor from New York is in the piece, and she's fantastic too, one of the other cops. But it was a great cast across the board. Victor Williams is also in it. Terry Kinney, my old Steppenwolf buddy, was in it. Kevin Anderson, Adelaide Clemens, David Cross. We were really fortunate, you know, I think that during the course of the 6 years that we were doing Justified, we had
great actors join us who wanted to play this kind of material, and we're lucky to get these kind of people again.
Justified, City Primeval begins its miniseries run tomorrow night, 10 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time on FX, available on cable and satellite. And later on, it will also be running on Hulu. So check out when that will be happening. We are speaking with Michael Dinner. He is the co-executive producer, showrunner, co-writer, and director of the series. He joins us live from west of Ireland this half hour, exclusively here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Simon Abbott, I'm with you live from New York. Happy you're with us now. 89 degrees. We get toward the bottom of the hour. If you have more questions before we leave Michael, or he is, make that call, 646-652-2906. Or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Our Philadelphia-based superfan, Rick Webb, is already in the chat room. And coming up in the next half hour, we'll tell you about a brand-new organization that's helping independent television services get more of a footing through smart TV products and multi-channel bundles. It's called the Independent Streaming Alliance, and one of the members is Reverie, the gay and lesbian programming service. We have the co-founder and chief executive, David Pelliccioni, will be with us in our next half hour. And at the top of the hour, we'll be joined by one of those independent services that might join this streaming alliance. It's called Power Tube Television, and you'll hear from its chief executive, Brian Bassoni, I believe, who'll join us from Florida. That's all coming up in the hour plus ahead right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Also, we have the answer to our classic trivia question we posed the last week or so, and a brand-new question coming up in our after the top of the hour. So stay tuned for that. We have a brand-new prize also we are adding on to what we could already get. So stay tuned for all of that. Michael, is it a different experience to co-write and direct the first two and the last two episodes for you?
Well, you know, over the years, you know, sometimes I would write, sometimes I would, rewrite. This piece in some ways is personal, so it was fun. It was fun to be involved from the get-go. We had a great time in the room. Everybody kind of partnered up and, you know, wrote together. And it was just a really, really good experience.
You are known as one of the most prolific episodic TV producers and directors. You have done all sorts of shows, Justified. You've done Law & Order. You've done Chicago Hope, a lot of different shows. What, as a director, makes you decide, I will work on this show rather than that show? What about your taste buds for directing lures you to do different assignments?
Well, sometimes I do things on assignments. Sometimes I write them. Sometimes, you know, I develop them. When it's something on assignment, I don't know, I read the script and see if I respond to it first as an audience. You know, does it elicit some kind of, you know, emotional response? And then I think about, well, is it the right thing for me to do, you know? And then you have to just take the plunge. So, you know, it starts with that first read, and does it excite you or not? And then and hopefully if it does, then you commit to it, you know?
Yeah. Are there television shows you've worked on in the past that after the experience or after the show goes off the air, you think to yourself, I wish I could have directed more. I wish I could have written an episode for it. I wish I could have produced it at some point.
No, not of the stuff that I've done, you mean, or stuff that I've seen?
Yeah,
that
of the stuff you've done, yeah.
Yeah, you know, you love the one you're with, you know, and there's some that that you love more than others even, you know. So, I usually, when a show goes off the air and we've had a good run, I usually feel satisfied. I mean, this is a good example. I mean, we had a 6-7 year run on Justified. We thought we stuck the landing. We thought we were done. And then we had this opportunity to kind of play in that sandbox again. I love doing the show. I love doing it tonally. I think it's a great opportunity for a director, a writer, an actor to be able to do this show. With Elmore stuff, we often say that you don't see the joke coming, you don't see the violence coming, you don't see the emotion coming, sometimes in the same breath. So I feel that's all in my wheelhouse, and I really love doing it. I felt that the same way about, you know, years ago. I kind of stumbled out of features into television. The first television show I did was The Wonder Years, and I felt the same thing about that. There was something personal about it. So, you know, like I said, you usually love the one you're with. You know, hopefully you do, but there's some that are really personal.
What do you think about because you were so involved with the original version on ABC, what do you think about the new version that's now in its second season and running this summer?
Oh, the Wonder Years?
Yeah.
I haven't watched it, to tell you the truth. I've been lucky enough to be pretty busy, so I kind of spot check new shows when I get a chance. But I haven't seen it. Again, that was a show that we had a great time doing, and I'd be interested to see what they do. I hear it's great, but that was about a very specific time and place. And
disclosure, we had the executive producer and creator of the revival. I think his name is Samari Henderson, was on our show when ABC ran the first season. And if you want to check it out, you can go to our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. Also, our website, tomorrowbetelevised.com, and some of our podcasts, including iHeartRadio.com, I believe, has that episode from a year and a half, almost 2 years ago. By the way, with City Primeval, did you shoot the program in Detroit and Miami? Or if not, what took the place of it?
There's no tax incentive anymore in Michigan, so I'd shot so many things in Chicago that in some ways it's actually tough to shoot Detroit and Chicago, because then you have to avoid a lot of the things that make Chicago, Chicago. But architecturally, it's a pretty good match. Our intention was to shoot in Chicago, then to go to Detroit for 4 days and go to Miami for 3 or 4 days. As it turned out, because of we had some COVID cases, we had some things that happened during production. We weren't able to go to Detroit. We were able to send a second unit there, but the original intention was to go there for about 4 days with the actors, but we couldn't do that. So it was shot in Chicago, mostly in Chicago, and some days in Miami.
Mm-hmm. If the viewer response is as vociferous as the critical response has been, do you see a third act for Justified?
I think we do. Again, had a good time doing it. We'd like to do that third act if the opportunity presents itself. Look, if this is the end of it and we're done, we feel good about it. At the same time, it wasn't our intention to kind of dangle the opportunity to do the third act, but I think as we're doing, we felt, we kind of discovered that there was another story to tell. And it's really up to FX. If they decide that they're interested in doing that and the audience tells them that they're interested in seeing it, I'd love to bring Raylan back for his third act.
Mm-hmm. And in the meantime, especially now that the Directors Guild does have a contract, and hopefully maybe that in some way will provoke the Actors Guild and the Writers Guild and the Alliance to get back to that bargaining table. More about that coming up before we leave you today. What's the next for you? What shows are you looking at doing? You mentioned that Silo Now second season.
I'm really not. We've been deep in Silo. We before the SAG strike hit, we were shooting away. The writers had withdrawn, but we were shooting in London, and our scripts were done. So with the SAG strike, we had to shut down last Friday. So I'll be returning to the United States. Hopefully everybody get back to the bargaining table. I'm a member of the Writers Guild and, and a supporter of the Guild. And we need a fair deal, and SAG needs a fair deal. And hopefully everybody will get to the table and we can figure this out, because I think it's crippling for the business, crippling for the people that work in the business, and crippling for the audience. So I'm hoping that I'll be able to return as soon as possible. We have about another 4 or 5 weeks of shooting on Silo, that we'll be able to finish that, and we'll see what the response is to Justified. I would like nothing more than, the writer's strike to be settled and that we could bring the old band together again and start talking about that third act.
The program is Justified, City Primeval. It begins its miniseries run tomorrow night on FX. That is 10 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time, and then it will probably be streamed on Hulu, available on smart TV sets and smart devices, and multi-channel bundles, too. Check your local links for FX available in the area on cable and satellite. For more details about the program and the service online, go to www.fxnetworks.com. That's plural, fxnetworks.com. It's www.fxnetworks.com. Justified, City Primeval, begins tomorrow night, 10 p.m. Eastern and Pacific Time. Michael Dinner, thank you very, very much for coming on. Congratulations to you, Graham, Timothy, the entire cast and crew on the great reviews so far, and hopefully the audience responds starting tomorrow night. It has been a great pleasure to have you on.
Thank you, Simon. It was fun.
You got it. Take care. All the greatest. And always, I know the best of luck tomorrow night starting then.
Thank you, man. Bye-bye.
Michael Dinner, producer-director on Justified, City Primeval, also executive producer and co-showrunner, joining us live from west of Ireland. When we come back, we'll talk about some independents that have a new alliance to help themselves, and one of the people involved is the gay and lesbian service, Reverie. We will have the co-founder and chief executive, David Felicioni, joining us live from Los Angeles. After we pause, bottom of the hour for web identification. This is www.blogcafe.com, speaker.com, and tune.com. Together, reaching nearly 90 million listeners around the world every month and growing. Coming your way tonight, it's Off the Cuff Radio. If you want some entertaining radio with live music to it, it's Off the Cuff Radio tonight, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific, exclusively on Blog Talk Radio. And remember, best be charged 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to our second half hour of Tomorrow Be Televised on this Monday afternoon, 17th of July, 2023. I'm with you live at the bottom of the hour. Happy to have you with us. 89 degrees, mostly sunny, hot and humid here in the Big Apple and elsewhere around the U.S. of A. Happy you're joining us wherever you are. We've got more guests coming your way over the hour plus ahead, so give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name, our superfan from Philadelphia, Rick Webb, still in the room. For a lot of new networks that are using smart TV products and multi-channel bundles to reach you, there's a brand new organization out to unite them in making sure that they stick around for you. It's called the Independent Streaming Alliance, and here to talk all about it is one of the charter members. It's Reverie, the Gay and Lesbian Programming Service. We are delighted to welcome back to this program, first time in a great while, its co-founder and chief executive, Damian Calcioni, joining us live from Los Angeles. Damian, welcome back.
Thank you so much for having me, Simon. It's so great to be back on the show.
It is a pleasure. So tell us about this alliance. What provoked it?
Yeah, you know, the Independent Streaming Alliance started its initial, negotiations internally with other folks who are in the space just the beginning of this year, around January, February. Philippe Goutin, the Chief Revenue Officer over at Redbox and Crackle, or Crackle Connects is now the new name, basically had spearheaded, grabbing, I think, a lot of decision makers and thought leaders in this space, brought them together in a room, started kind of a think tank virtually, like over Zoom once a month, and it just kind of started to expand outwardly. I think that the group really is put together some, big movers and shakers with the specifically AVOD and FAST services and publishers in this space that are not owned by a major aid studio. And collectively, the group is being formed to fight for our own rights in an ever-changing business model and in streaming.
Now, how is this alliance separate or working with the Interactive Advertising Bureau, which is also representing a lot of these services?
Yeah, so, I can't speak too much about the IAB because we recently, just joined this year and presented at NewFront. We were actually the first LGBTQ company to ever present at a NewFront, which went amazing. Had a wonderful time in New York. I think that there's definitely a lot of crossover, and there's a lot of similarities between the two, but I do believe that in the case of the ISA, this is really from an operator perspective, and specifically operators who have pain points in, monetizing and scaling FAST services, free ad-supported streaming TV services, and AVOD, ad video on demand products. And that's where I think there's a big differentiator. Like ISA is very specialized. IAB is more of, a total watchdog, if you will, and a complete massive organization that still has, its hands in a lot of different spaces like podcasting and advertising and specifically, not just in the space of FAST and AVOD.
When the alliance was officially announced on June 12th, in addition to your organization, these other independent programmers were also involved. Allen Media Group, that's, of course, Byron Allen's firm, Chicken Soup for the Soul mm-hmm. Entertainment, Crackle Connect, of course, Crackle is one of their services, Cineverse, formerly Cinedigm, Future Today, Quelly TV, Scripps Networks, Tastemade, Trusted Media Brands, and Vivo, all of which we have had on this program in one way or another. It's been a month now since that official announcement. Anybody else join in?
Yes, yeah. I mean, I'm not at liberty to say who they are because I do believe that there's another announcement coming out with the second wave of folks who are joining. Just from an evangelist standpoint, I will say I have spoken personally to a number of different services who are not on that list, who are all, reaching out in inbound to want to join the group to help, lobby for our rights in different spaces. Of the different aspects of the business that we're really trying to create a single voice from. I'm excited because, we did a poll and about, 60 to 70% of all EPGs in FAST and AVOD, that content comes from independents. They does not come from just the major studios. And so, our goal, our mission, at least this year, is to have as many folks join this group. It's completely dues-free. There is no cost to join. The group is owned by its governance, which is very unique. So this is not like a professional organization that, is trying to make money and is run like a business. This is very much, it's a completely different kind of structure in the way that it is managed, it's governed, and it's been created. We have four subcommittees right now, four working groups essentially, one that is focusing on measurement in our space, one that is focusing on distribution that's in our space, another one that is there for, PR and outreach and new membership. And then I myself have been asked to spearhead the diversity, equity, and inclusion and belonging group, where we're really focused on certified minority-owned publishers, FAST operators in this space.
In that front, we know that there are a number of new networks aimed and owned by African Americans, some which we've covered on this program, like Blavity TV and DKL Media and a number of others. We know that there are networks out there that, of course, are Spanish language or bilingual, and there's mm-hmm. in the Latino marketplace. And, of course, we have Chime TV, which is one of several that's trying out there with the Asian American marketplace. We have a number of Native American organizations like Red Nation, the Netflix for Native Americans that we featured on this program last year. Are you hearing from a lot of those services as well as others that are trying to get to the surface?
Oh, yes, yes. Half of those are my friends. I could name the CEOs that I usually, I'm constantly talking to at least one or two times a year or in the same spaces. Look, I think that, any type of minority certified owned and operated business, we're technically all small businesses, like we still have similar pain points. And we have a lot of the same challenges that I truly believe that other services do not, be it raising capital, be it, understanding how to cash flow certain advertising deals because payment terms tend to take a longer payout time. And for bigger businesses, that's palatable. For smaller businesses like ourselves, that's not. So we have a lot of different challenges. And then even on the measurement side, too, should a minority group be held to the same, standard of measurement or viewership that a mainstream network has? I disagree. I don't think that it should. It's an unfair playing advantage. Case in point, I can just speak to obviously my own community. LGBTQ people in the United States make up 7 to 10% of the overall population, with the vast majority being in the younger demographic, specifically Gen Z and millennial. And so for us, we don't want to be measured up against bigger services because that's unfair for us if we're only a certain percentile of the American audience, the viewer consuming audience. We should be matched up against our own audience panels. But unfortunately, that a lot of these measurement tools that are out there, and I'll remain nameless because we're working with all of them, and I don't want to speak out of school, but there was no panels that were created, not enough data science around, what other than census data, what the affinity of these groups look like. And, again, just speaking to the one group that I represent, you know, LGBTQ in the United States has a disposable income, like a gross GDP of $1.7 trillion a year. That's not a small group. We're actually the third highest consumer purchasing group in the United States, next to Hispanic, which is at 2.1, and then next to, of course, just the white mainstream audience. And so, you know, a lot of what we're doing still is playing catch up on educating brands, educating SSPs, even educating the operators that we syndicate our channels to on what these opportunities really are, what they look like, and the demand now from the advertising community to want to be able to target these groups and be able to target them at scale and be able to target them in an authentic way where, you know, they're not being ostracized or canceled in any way from the community. And I think aligning with, authentically owned and certified authentically owned and operated businesses like the Reveries, you know, like the Allen Media Groups, like, you know, the LATVs, the Canellas, the Quellies of the world, is extremely important for the success and the ROI of these campaigns that these advertisers are trying to seek out in these affinity groups, because they all have to build social capital in some way, and they can't do it by, you know, hiring a single person from that group and expecting them to have all the answers. You need to work with, you know, companies like ours that are certified minority-owned and operated, who live, eat, and breathe this life and have that lived experience. And I think that is where, my goal for our subcommittee, the DE&IB, Diversity, Equity, Inclusion, and Belonging Subcommittee, is that we can start to, as a group, as a whole, really dive into, the spaces, the pain points that we have with the holdcos and the agencies, and educate them on the correct way to approach these communities at scale.
Dan Pelcioni is the person you're hearing right now this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. He is the co-founder and one of the chief executives of Reverie, the leading gay and lesbian programming service available on smart TV sets, smart devices, and multi-channel bundles. And Reverie is one of the founding members of the new Independent Streaming Alliance, ISA. And we're going to talk more about what their priorities are as we now see more and more viewership and more advertising go to smart TV distributed services. Damian joins us live from Los Angeles this half hour here on Smart Beach Televised. We're happy you're joining us, too, on this Monday afternoon. Time I'm with you from the other side of the U.S. of A, Nueva York, 88 degrees at the bottom of the hour. Let's hear from you. Give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. First of three episodes we're doing this week, we'll be with you Wednesday and Friday at this very hour. And joining us on Friday, we will have the creator, writer, executive producer of a series in search of a network. It's called Mother, May I Have a Kidney. It's a dramedy, and Veronica Reyes Howe is the person in charge, and she'll be with us live next Friday, as well as Thursday, 3 p.m. Eastern New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Be Televised. Damian, no question that with 90% of all U.S. households having smart TVs, smart devices, multi-channel bundles, you now have Telly, the free TV set that's going to 500,000 people starting this summer. If it works, could be millions more next year. Viewership is going that way. Advertising is going that way. So with all that environment, what is sort of the top priority right now, this early on with the ISA's existence?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the top priority right now, I can only say just with confidence that this has been an issue that has been plaguing us, is that there are certain operators, I'm not going to call them out right now on this call, but like that, they are owning majority of our inventory, and their models are not a shared inventory split. And so we are not seeing specifically on these basically licensing out deals of our FAST channels that rev share pales in comparison to what we can yield independently from them. And a case in point, you know, the average CPM is anywhere between $10 and $15 for FAST, programmatically sold, but on direct sold campaigns, you know, we at Reverie see anywhere between $35 and $60. $35 is the lowest that we take, and so it's really a tough pill to swallow when we have these major operators who are pushing back because their models are that they want to represent all the inventory and then rev share to us. It's hard to justify not allowing us to have that ability to sell. I don't understand it. I would assume that both parties want to make the most amount of capital, and the sales rights are more based, I think, in insecurity and fear of losing market share in the sales side. But I think the biggest misconception is, you know, again, just speaking to my experience with Reverie, we will never compete with those mainstream buyers because we are playing in the diversity, equity, and inclusion buys, and you must be certified by the National Gay and Lesbian Chamber of Commerce, the Women's and Business Enterprise Supply Chain, the Minority Business Enterprise, the National Gay and Lesbian Chamber of Commerce, the Women's Business Enterprise Supply Chain, the Minority Business Enterprise Supply Chain, the Small Business Enterprise, the Disadvantaged Business Enterprise, the Black, the Hispanic, or the Latino. Like, there's all these certifications that exist to show that you are authentically owned and operated by a minority group. Reverie, we have 4 of those certifications because I have 3 equal co-founders, 2 women of color, 1 who also happens to be an Army veteran, and my 4th co-founder is a Hispanic gay man, and I identify as non-binary as well as gay. So you can just see that, like, for us, pushing those to the forefront are really important with those buyers, because those buyers are seeking out those minority groups. They want to change the view of the investment on the advertising side. And I think that those certifications really mean something. They take upwards of a year sometimes to get for us. And so I think, you know, there's this fear that the mainstream operators are going to be competing against us in the sales side of things, when that is a complete fallacy and it's totally untrue. We're not going to compete. We're going to be additive, if anything, to their current sales initiative. And I think that direct sold campaigns will always be at the top of the food chain. And I think that those are the things that really drive the industry, and they're going to drive the industry forward, especially as it relates to monetization. But the rules around it from the operators are these things that need to change and need to become more equitable.
Mm-hmm. We're also starting to see this movement toward interactive advertising and product and service ordering through the television set, because of the fact that artificial intelligence has made these sets or the users of them, the ability to use the set with their voice, their body language, their voice remote, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And we're also seeing new product categories like vegan products, food and otherwise, new pet products, regional chains starting to go national, chains that are ventures like Good Ranchers and others that are trying to be like made in the USA products and services. Is there starting to be talk with the Alliance about tapping into that, but especially the whole idea of interactive advertising and especially the ability to order products and services through the television set, sort of a video retail, video commerce?
Yeah, I mean, if you think about how many, and, you know, again, I know that I'm a victim of the impulse buy on Instagram, on social media. I think about how many products and how my mind shifts. Has shifted to purchasing right directly off of that small screen. I don't think that we're that far away from that same type of psychology of consumer behavior, purchasing directly from a long-form piece of content on a big-screen TV. And I think those, you know, in the world of ad tech, those products are being created to allow things to become more shoppable. I mean, the beast in the room is Amazon, right? They have more data about consumer purchasing than anyone in the world. And if anyone's going to achieve that, I think first, it's going to be Amazon and Amazon Prime. I actually do think that they've probably already achieved it. One of my favorite, and I'll give an example, one of my favorite shows called Making the Cut, which is hosted by Heidi Klum and Tim Gunn. It's kind of a, you know, an updated version of Project Runway, but all produced by Amazon. The top prize is $1 million. To a designer to start their fashion brand, their entire brand. But what's interesting is the top 3 winners of every challenge week over week, it's a competitive, you know, elimination show, those products are immediately available for sale on a Making the Cut store. And every season I have purchased, myself and my husband, one of, you know, the pieces of one of the designs, right? And sometimes we had to wait upwards of like 6 months to receive the design because it was in such high demand. And I think there's a great example of that marriage or shoppability in long-form content. Now, do I see this working on every platform? No. Do I think that the tech still has a long way to go? Absolutely. But I do see a concerted effort to find other ways to monetize and create revenue streams outside of just commercial inventory, for sure.
Mm-hmm. We're speaking with Damon Telecioni. He is co-founder and chief executive of Reverie, the leading gay and lesbian filming service available on smart TV sets, smart device, and multi-channel bundles. His company is also one of the charter members of the brand new Independent Streaming Alliance, ISA. And if you request your comment or remaining minutes with Damien, make the call, 646-652-2906. Or use the chat room, SimonApple04. And coming up at the top of the hour, the answer to our classic trivia question that we've been posing for the last week and change. And then in our next half hour, brand new question, two prizes now in play. So stay tuned for all of that. Since we have you here, Damien, what's the latest on Reverie? How is it doing? And is the writers and the actors strike impacting original programming in any way?
Yeah, so Reverie is doing great. We just had our most explosive month of our career. Of course, Pride season in June is always like Christmas for us, literally, not even just figuratively. And we tripled our revenue historically in this one quarter in Q2 for the first time ever in the history of the company. And the viewership was at 4 or 5x what we've seen in previous years. These are all great little validations that we're going in the right direction, that the consumers and the audience members are responding to the content now that we're curating and programming and creating. And I think that, again, also speaks to the evolution of the opportunity of this market. And what's interesting is now we're at about 7-8 million monthly active viewers across all of our channels and networks, both domestically and globally. And people always ask me what percentage of that audience is actually LGBTQ. And we're like, we can't qualify that because, there's only so much data that we receive from our channel providers. We have assumptions around it. But we do believe that a big percentage are allies, meaning that they are not a member of the LGBTQ community. And we think that is amazing because it's showing now the verticalization we're leaving the verticalization of just LGBTQ and becoming just mainstream network, which has always been our dream, right? We want all audiences to be able to enjoy the content and the stories that we are uplifting and programming and putting out. Now, on the original side, we had one big launch called Pride Ball. If anyone knows the voguing ballroom dance scene, born out of New York in the 1980s, this was actually the subject matter of two shows that were canceled last year. One, Posed on FX, Ryan Murphy's show, scripted show, which was amazing. Billy Porter, I think, even won the Emmy for it. And then Legendary, which was HBO Max's dancing competition show, celebrity dancing competition show, also canceled during, I think, that Discovery-Warner merger. A lot of shows were just kind of not renewed or left to the side. But with Pride Ball, we took the lens of queer sports. The way that you watch the show, the way that we had set up in terms of the format was you're watching competitive categories with actual real cash prizes and real athletes in the ballroom, or creative athletes, as I like to say, in the ballroom space competing for, upwards of $10,000 top prizes. But we had commentators like you would, like announcers, sports announcers. We had a live audience. We had scorecards. We had trophies. We had this entire look and feel and appeal like you were watching almost like the WWE meets, Major League Baseball. It's that effect. And it ended up being a 3-hour piece of content where our audience watched almost 95% of the entire show. Which, for anyone who knows statistics and fast and streaming, to have that length of watch time is extremely valuable. And it does obviously signal to us that there is a massive audience that would watch this. And it became our number one watch show within 2 weeks of release. Still is today, breaking crazy records for us. Very proud of that because it's also uplifting a different minority group and community. Typically, black and trans and Hispanic and trans communities. But when you watch it, you don't need to be queer. You don't need to know anything about LGBTQ. You just have to love, you have to have a competitive nature and want to see folks throw down for these cash prizes, which they did. And I was really excited because the big advertiser for us was got to be, you know, hair cosmetics and dyes and hairsprays and gels. And Nike underwrote this show. And to have someone like Nike, such a major Fortune 500, big brand, especially very autonomous with all types of sports, to come in and say, hey, we want to be first. We want to be here with you and underwriting this ball and featuring our product. It was a great marriage, and it worked out just so beautifully. We're excited, and we're obviously in planning for, 3 to 4 balls next year. Now, to answer the second half of your question, with the Writers' Strike and the Actors Guild, Screen Actors Guild, which I'm still a member of the Screen Actors Guild, SAG-AFTRA of America. I've had my SAG card since I was for over 20 years now. I'm not going to give you my age, but that should tell you how old I am. But, I think that there are real challenges on both sides of the table. On the one side, Alan Woke wrote an amazing article in TV Rev right around the time that we announced the alliance. I believe it was like the week before, week of, when the Stream TV show was going on in Denver, that really outlines the challenges for operators and the challenges for creatives. In this case, he was talking to the writers' side because the actors weren't on strike yet. But when you look at, the evolution of streaming and the, the death of theater, in actual in-person theater viewing, there are certain, facets of this business that they don't have answers to or know what the business models are. And even with the advent of AI, AI is just one component. I don't think it's the biggest component. I think AI is creating tools for filmmakers to be able to create at lower cost points. And, I give an example of even with Writers Guild, what was it like before Google? Before Google existed, search. You'd have to go to the library and open up an encyclopedia, and that was how we were doing the research and development. So this allowed for Google search, allowed for the entire world, not just writers in general, but even journalists of any size, to be able to, research and develop certain topics and issues at the touch of your fingers. And I believe that ChatGPT and things like AI are going to be tools for us. But the problem is that, at the end of the day, there still needs to be an operator of that tool, and someone needs to be able to manipulate, what it is you're telling artificial intelligence to do. I don't think that we're moving into the matrix just yet. And so I think if writers and actors really think from that perspective, and think about how, technology can inform and design and create for us, and maybe look at it from the lens of the technology perspective as opposed to the studio perspective, limiting that ability to use those tools, I think, is going to be very disruptive to the industry. And I think that at the other side of it, too, when you look at, the emotional state that both sides are in, the writers, the actors, and the studios, these execs, they are heated. This is a fire in the way that they are speaking, the cadence, the speech, the way they're delivering their messaging that I have not seen in a strike in a really long time. And what does that tell me? It tells me the psychology behind that is that both of them are going to dig their heels in to be right. And that means that we're going to have a very long, dark period of nothing being made in Hollywood. Mind you, there's still things being made outside of Hollywood. And, I want to always preface that, we don't just – I live in the bubble of Los Angeles, but there is a massive bubble outside of us that still creates really high quality work, and they're not going to be necessarily under the same guise of this strike because they're in Korea, they're in India, they're in the UK, they're in other places in the world that may or may not support – certain productions may or not support that strike, but they're going to – it's not going to stop them from creating that work. And so, because remember, SAG-AFTRA is only for the United States. Writers Guild is only for the United States. They have sister unions in other countries, but it doesn't mean that those unions are necessarily going to be supporting or continuing in solidarity or stopping their own paychecks and work. And I think we're going to see a lot of runaway productions to other countries. where there isn't strikes going on, then the studios will overcompensate with that or reality TV programming. You know, so I think this is a long haul. I'm really scared. I am really scared for both sides to see how this is going to end up, because I don't think it's going to end well for anyone. And I'm not pro either side, you know, just to be put that on the record. And then lastly, for us at Reverie, we are a non-union network. We predominantly work in unscripted content. I like to say that we're long-form branded content. You know, we don't greenlight projects unless an advertiser is underwriting. And so a really big part of what we do is we're pitching content constantly to agencies and brands, and showing them kind of the lift and the ROI that they get from our long-form pieces of content like Pride Ball. Because rather than just sponsor, you know, for Nike, an example, a photo shoot or a short video featuring product, you could be integrated into a 3-hour live sports show for the same cost point. You know, there's no question. And when you look at the return on earned media versus paid media, you know, it's insane, you know, the amount of people we have in our audience arsenal that really wants to watch and engage with this content. So we're not unfortunately affected by this. We are in support and solidarity of writers, directors. But at the same time, we still have two productions that are in play for this quarter that, you know, we're not stopping on, because we had sold them to advertisers, and, you know, we've got to make revenue and pay our bills too, just like everybody else.
Yeah. If you want to know more about the Independent Streaming Alliance, ISA, here's where you go online. Independent Streaming Alliance, all one phrase, .com. It's independentstreamingalliance.com. And, of course, for more details about Damian's service, Reverie, which is available on smart TV sets, devices, and multi-channel bundles all over the place, go to reverie.tv, reverie.tv. Damian, great to have you back on the program. Thank you very much for telling us about where ISA is at. We're going to be following it very, very closely, and, of course, your service as well. And you are always welcome to be on anytime. It's always a pleasure.
Oh, thank you so much. It's always great to see you. Thanks for having me.
You guys, Damian, take care. Enjoy the week.
Take care. Bye.
Damian Pelliccioni, co-founder, chief executive Reverie, joining us live from Los Angeles. When we come back, a network that might very well become part of ISA. We'll find out. It just started last week, called PowerTube TV. You will meet the chief executive, Brian Bassone. He'll join us live, I believe, from Florida, as we pause after the top of the hour for web identification. www.blogtalkradio.com, speaker.com, and tune.com, together reaching nearly 90 million listeners around the world every month and growing. BTR is your home every weekday for the January Jones Show. It's a show not for women only. Weekdays, 10 a.m. Eastern, 7 a.m. Pacific, the January Jones Show right here on Blog Talk Radio. Don't forget Best BTR 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to more of Tomorrow Be Televised on this Monday afternoon, 17th of July, 2023. And welcome to those joining us after the top of the hour. Sometimes I'm with you live from New York, 88 degrees at the top of the hour, hot and humid here in the Big Apple. One more guest coming your way in the program, and we invite you to be part of the program. How do you do that? You pick up the phone, and when you do, you use this number to get in, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is good anyway. You're catching us across the country, around the globe, here on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker Tuner Radio. And you can also be part of our chat room, which already has our super fan, Rick Webber from Philadelphia, inside. It's SimonApple04 by name. You'll find it at the homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. Coming up after this interview, we will have the answer to our current classic trivia question and a brand new question for you with two prizes in play, so stay tuned for that. Also, we will pay a tribute and a celebration to a wonderful local newscaster here in New York, a weathercaster specifically, who passed away suddenly last night. Her name is Elise Finch. And if you don't know her from outside New York, you ought to. We'll explain why. And we'll also have a comment about where we stand with the Writers Guild and the SAG-AFTRA-Actors strikes. I think it's time for some action to get taken, and I'll explain that. That's coming up after the bottom of the hour. And right now, joining us live for our final interview of the day, he is the chief executive of one of the newest television networks around. It's called PowerTube Television, premiered last Thursday, and his name is Brian Bassone. Brian, welcome in.
How are you doing, sir?
Very fine, thank you. And Brian, where are you calling us from? I believe that your organization is based in Florida, Newport Beach, right?
Nope, actually in Port St. Lucie, Florida.
Ah, great location, by the way. Right. My parents often live in Florida over the half the year, so great, great, great. Brian, for those who don't know, tell us about PowerTube. What's it all about?
Paratube TV is a automotive-based streaming network that we've created for, obviously, automotive enthusiasts, motorcycle, sleds, power bikes, different things like that. Basically, we have automotive-based content, full TV shows, shorts, podcasts, obviously like yours, video-based from there, and a bunch of new and classic content that we own through our company. In the past, my background goes back to Fox Television and the Speed Channel. That's where I got my start, basically working in the television and automotive business from there. We were able to purchase from Fox Television a large group of shows that we were involved with many years ago, which is called Pink's, Pink's All Out, Pastime, Drag Race High, very popular shows on the network, 1.5 million viewers every Monday night. I was privileged to be involved as behind the scenes as well as on-air talent, and I always felt like these shows needed to come back out again. I've been kind of the, let's say, the person that brings these back to the grassroots racer that that really needs a level that these shows put them on. Pink's A Lot, Pastime, or drag racing shows that highlighted the grassroots racer and put them on an elevated stage, and it really brought the racing community together. It took this little guy, put him on a big stage, and we did this, and it was so popular. Some of our events that we did would actually sell out 33,000 people in the stands at a lot of events, like in ZMAX Dragway, in Ohio, and we opened up our racer registration within 5 minutes. We actually shut down the internet, and then they tried to call in and shut down the phone system in the area. So these shows were very, very popular, and we felt like we needed to bring these back. So we purchased them. We had let's call it a deal going with the Discovery Network to bring them and put them back on the air. And when Warner Television merged in the middle of that, our deal went south. And that left us to, what do we do with the purchase of 400-plus really good quality television shows that people want? And it just made the constant decision at that point to just say, we're not waiting anymore for a linear television network to really guide us or tell us what we can't and can't do. In that particular time, I made the decision that I'm going to create our own network. That's all. With the way technology is these days and the tools that we have and the team that I put together, we were able to basically put together our own streaming network, and we launched it on June 18th. It took a lot of work, but it's out there. Right now we're streaming on our platform, which is our web-based platform, which is Watch PowerTube TV, and as well it's on Roku. Our apps are being finalized right now. We have two apps for Android and iOS, and then we're also working on Apple, as well as Samsung Android TV and a couple others from there. So we figure by September, October, we should be reachable by pretty much any means possible that you have. Whatever device you have or whatever is on your television or on your mobile device, you should be able to reach our content.
Over the last 9 months to a year, Brian, we have seen this emergence of new channels like PowerTube that are trying to be auto race oriented or racing oriented or classic car oriented or auto scene oriented. Why do you think we're sort of seeing this? And you mentioned Speed Channel. We had last year the people reviving Speed Vision, which at that time was sort of the rival cable service to Speed Channel. Why do you think we're seeing this this revved up interest, if you will, pardon the pun, in automotive or auto racing or racing programming?
Well, let's get a little history back. So number one, Speed Vision was originally Speed Channel. So Speed Vision was bought out, and then less than a year or so later, they changed it from Speed Vision to Speed Channel itself, and then Speed Channel became Speed, and then from there they shuttered and became FS1. And when Speed shuttered and went to FS1, the idea was that they had increased the shows like we produced or worked with or I was on were such a large hit that it grew the network so fast and the popularity of these shows were so big that Fox felt like they were always looking for one channel that would be large enough on a base that they could go after ESPN. So actually Speed Channel is where, you know, FS1 came from, FS1, FS2. So on a August, it was actually, I think, 10, 12 years, I can't remember, I have the date, but they switched it over and it went to FS1 at that particular point. That left a huge void in the automotive reality and racing television stuff. A lot of stuff we do is all reality-based television, and as you heard from, obviously you were just talking to your last guest, when this writer strike goes down, reality TV is going to be huge, number one, because you don't, it's non-scripted, it happens organically, and that was one of the biggest parts of our shows was it was never scripted, everything was live, it all based around live events or live sporting events, and everything was non-scripted. It was real, real television, and people connected with that. And if you go back to the automotive side of it, the automotive world, just look up the statistics of automotive sales, automotive aftermarket parts, SEMA, PRI. The largest convention in Vegas is the SEMA convention. I mean, rivals only by or is equal to with the electronics convention out there. But automotive, everybody is an automotive fan or has a car, or has a vehicle, has some sort of a sports, you know, related deal. I mean, whether you're it's crossover into hunting, fishing and stuff, you're using, you know, 4x4s, side-by-sides, there's all these automotive-based stuff. So we all relate to them because we all use them. And when Speed Channel went away, the only thing that picked up was Velocity. And Velocity picked up some of the shows, but Fox would not get rid of the ones they owned. They would not sell or put along. So only the independent shows that were either time buys or, let's say, were owned themselves, you know, all the production was owned by these individuals, went over to Velocity. And then Velocity turned into Motor Trend Television. And as I spoke, Motor Trend Television went through a huge shakeup with the whole Warner merger. I mean, I was in talks the whole time during it, and I got a phone call frantic, but basically said, Brian, they cut all of my budget. I have nothing, zero. Nothing. So I can't work with you on this. I can't buy these shows, and I can't do anything. And so that merger and the culture we're living in changed when it came to the only network out there that was carrying automotive. And we all saw the opportunity. And as you said, you spoke to Speed Vision. Well, it was kind of crazy because Speed Vision and I launched within 3 weeks of each other. Had no idea either one of us was doing the same thing. And he basically was the birth of Speed Channel, but I own pretty much all of the really popular content that was on Speed Channel. So here in Ursay, you know, I've got the goods, he's got the old name, and we went back and forth at this time. I actually contacted to see if he wanted to work together. We never got anywhere with that. But at that point, it was time to control our own destiny, and this is where we are right now. Automotive television is super popular. There's not many places to watch it, and we're just giving everybody a home right now. I mean, that's what we're doing. We're giving a home for automotive content, and not just these old shows. If you look on our site itself, we have a content creator development program. And my mantra has always been that there's so many great shows that never made it to television or made it on the big stage because it was always – all the narrative was always directed by – whatever that channel, whether it be Fox or whether it be History Channel, you know, they want build shows. Everybody wants these build shows. They're great. But if you didn't have one in the last 10 years, you really never got a chance to really put your content out there. I'm giving that opportunity to everybody. If someone has great content as a well-produced show or even to the point where we have YouTube people out there that are producing content that have really good content, let's say, or skills, we'll help them with our content creator development program create the shows into a much more, let's say, higher level show. So not just the shaky cell phone stuff. We actually have a program where we send somebody out there, they work with them on camera stuff, lighting and production. And then we have a contract for 3 years and they we give them a home to put their stuff up, you know, their great shows and content on. So we're nurturing new shows, new creators, and we're giving everybody a home that's automotive or automotive adjacent. So we're not just cars and cars racing, but things related to automotive or even hunting and fishing we'll be looking into. We're going to be growing this network larger and larger, but you know, basically we're the platform that you know you can count on to give you really great content.
PowerTube TV is the new auto-oriented service, and it's running now on the Roku channel, on Samsung Smart TV sets, Apple TV, TV sets with the Android operating system, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And we're speaking with chief executive of not only the service, but its parent company, Boss One Media, Brian Bossone, joining us live from Port St. Lucie, Florida, this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. Tom Appen with you live from New York. Good to have you with us. We're up the coast from where Brian is, where it's 88 degrees after the top of the hour. Let's hear from you. Give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Again, we have three episodes coming your way this week, today, Thursday, and Friday, all starting at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific. And coming up on Friday, we'll tell you about a television series that's already been produced that is looking for a network. The series is called Mother, May I Have a Kidney? It's a dramedy. You'll meet the creator, writer, executive producer, Veronica Reyes Howe, right here Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, here on Tomorrow Be Televised. You know, you mentioned earlier, Brian, shows like Pink's and Pastime and Pink's All Out, and all of them had a game show element to it that I know a lot of fans who remember those shows fondly still recall. Is that something you're doing with the creators that you're working with, is to bring that kind of program back? And what other kinds of shows are you working with creators on in terms of original content?
So the Pink's and Pink's All Out events are based around – Pink's was really popular because Pink's was lose the race and lose your ride. That's why it was so popular, because no one has ever done that before. Our plans is, yes, to bring that show back. And that's why we've grown or we're building this network up. As we grow and grow, we'll have an audience built in, and then, of course, be able to reach out to sponsors, partners, and you know, marketing manufacturers to help us create new shows. The Pastime one is the game show that basically was the first ever. It was the first ever automotive game show, and it was so popular that when it was being produced for Speed Channel for Fox, it was 143 or 48 episodes made in 10 episode blocks. They would come on every single night, half hour episodes, and the popularity is insane. That is 100% going to come back. I guarantee you that. We've already got people that are, you know, marketing partners that are wanting to jump on this. And yes, so these are the things that we'll bring back. And another big important one too, I think Ray is actually head of content development and actually was the executive producer for Pastime and Drag Race High, is Drag Race High. And that's one thing that's missing in the world we have right now, is automotive tech shops that are in high schools. That show was based around two high school, rivaling high school shop classes that built cars and raced them at the end. And that's so important in the days that we have right now with the lack of having, everybody has to go to college, having really hands-on tech kind of people out there. So we want to do that show again, and we've got some schools that have reached out and some groups, and we're going to do that as well. But on our network itself, we are not limiting ourselves basically to just automotive or, let's say, racing. We've got build shows like Nichols Customs. We've got Racing with Mason, which is a comedy-based automotive. Basically, it goes out to ARCA races and you know, all kinds of bus races. It's comedy mixed in with that. We've got Overland Pioneers, which is a new series that we have on there, which follows, I don't know if you've heard anything called Overlanding, where basically they travel around the country or different countries with, just live off the grid for a while. We have that as well. That's really awesome. The cinematography on that is just amazing. We've got Cars and Coffee Exposed, which is actually being produced directly for the network right now by DH Motor. And that is going to be following but they're traveling the country for the largest Cars and Coffee events, showing how that lifestyle and how that event has grown and going to see all the beautiful cars and everything involved with that. We've got Drifting from Drift America. Scott Umbry, who is a drifter, has a builds drift cars for a living and does schooling and shows people to do it. Dream Car Garages shows the top certified dream garages in the world. Podcast talking about cars with Randy Cardone and Bob, Hot Rod Bob Eck, and there and it's really good content across from everything. We even have Ride Ranch, which is coming up, which is a property up in upstate New York that has a full facility where they have racing for motocross, side-by-side, and even jet ski racing up there. We'll have that. Web 4x4 Garage, great 4x4 stuff. They build out Jeeps and rock crawling stuff. So we have a whole bunch of good stuff. And then, of course, I don't know if you know Clay Milliken, top fuel dragster driver. Mm-hmm. He just won in Denver. He has his own channel, which he calls Stomp on the Loud Pedal, which covers basically his life in the, you know, going after another top fuel champion, which is six times now. And as well, some of the shows that he was on that he hosted, which is Burnout, and other shows from there. But we've got all kinds of crazy stuff going on. And one of the things that's really going to be interesting is called Race Rewind. It's a classic live feed events from, let's say, multiple events. We've got ADRL, NHRDA, and we've got Duck X Productions. We've got his radio races. They're all cut down when we take out all that downtime, and we call it a garage mix, where basically you could turn on PowerTube TV and click on the Race Rewind channel, let it go in the background, and watch live racing, you know, cut down racing events for like 6 hour periods at a time and just let it roll while you're working on your hot rod in the background. But yeah, it's we've got tons and tons, and we've got more racing and more individual content coming in from really great creators all over the country.
By the way, for those who don't know what a Cars and Coffee event is, the series called Cars and Coffee Exposed is going to be running, I believe, starting in September. What is a Cars and Coffee event? It just, when you like visualize, I'm thinking, is this auto racing at breakfast and like, that people are, you know, in the stands sipping coffee or tea or milk while the action's going on?
No, actually, it's a car show. So basically, if you ever see an event in your area called Cars and Coffee, take the time, head out. It's generally Sundays or Saturday mornings, usually once a month, so it's very regimented when it's time. And let's say the first one that was shot was done over here in Palm Beach. There was anywhere from up to 2,000 cars, Palm Beach outlets down here. And what they do is they meet in the morning. It's very well organized. All the South Florida car clubs all come there. So you have your Lamborghini section, your Porsche, your classic car section, your Mustangs, and you got your imports. And basically it's just a meetup in the morning. They get there like, we were there at 6, 7 o'clock. It was already loaded in. And by 9, 10 o'clock, you've got 2,000 cars, and they got free coffee, tons of vendors. It's an event. It's a social car event that basically you drink some coffee and just talk about your cars with like-minded people. They're unbelievable events.
Duck Northwest Media, one of our other super fans, just joined us, gave a thumbs up in the chat room. Thanks for jumping in on this Monday afternoon, Duck. If you have a question or comment, put it in the room or make a call, 646-652-2906. When it comes to this kind of programming, Brian, you have a lot of advertiser categories you can use. You got cars, car parts stores like O'Reilly's, Advanced Auto Parts, battery makers like Interstate, et cetera, et cetera. How are you doing early on in terms of getting advertising?
Well, the good part about it is that we've got some existing relationships. I've been in this business now, 18 years, I think it's going on, and before that I've got 30-plus years in the automotive aftermarket business. We've created some really great relationships, and I think they've all been looking for an opportunity like this, something a little different, but something that's highly targeted and focused. That's one thing we could deliver is a really focused or let's say lead generation for a super focused person on what they're trying to sell. So you're not throwing a O'Reilly's Auto Parts ad somewhere on the internet or maybe over here, and a Google ad maybe catches up. We could give them really directed into the people that, the hardcore people that buy their products. That's always what I said. The high-end racers that get paid millions of dollars, these spokespeople for these, for these products and these races, they ask for free stuff. Our guys that race and build these cars look for a little support. And when they get shows like this, they appreciate sponsors and partners that get behind it, and they really do support it. We did a lot with Pennzoil for years, and they gave away tons of Pennzoil. And, the outpouring for them and clicking on and using and, sending us pictures with their Pennzoil bottles and stuff like that, I mean, our fans get behind it. Our viewers get behind that. So, and a lot of the sponsors or marketing partners know that. And it makes it, a lot easier to approach. And now with this, we can control their destiny in the sense that we give them product placement inside of the actual filming of the shows. So they could have product in, let's say, Webb's 4x4. He's building out one of these Jeeps. Well, Jeep suppliers, 4Wheel Parts or something like that can get on board. They could have their parts in there, their name right on there, their, in lower thirds, or actually right there utilizing their products. So we give them that stage. And as well, we own the time, the air. We could do 30-second commercials. We could integrate. We could put lower thirds on the actual streaming network. If you look to the right, we have, 200 by 200 square, marketing squares, direct links. And one of the unique things that we're offering to marketing partners, and a lot of people have never even thought about this before, but if you look lately, go to a lot of the websites, there is really good content on how-tos on a lot of a lot of these like Edelbrock's or Holly or Summit and Jegs, those guys like that. They know the power of video these days, and they're creating a ton of great content. If you get a chance, look at Hagerty. Go to the Hagerty's website and look at their video content. It's amazing. The time spent on it. We're offering these partners integration or giving them a channel if they have enough themselves. We just spoke to a company called Rottler that produced a video series, 25-minute episodes. I think they have like 25 or 30, about mixture based on a podcast mixed in with product and product know-how and how to use their products and stuff like that. And it's really great content. We're going to give them their own channel. They'll be able to actually have a channel with a schedule and have their video content and links from there. In return, we'll work with them. They'll give us product to help with our builds. It's kind of an ecosystem. What we're building here is a community, and that's what I always say. This is a community for automotive people, for partners. This is where you can come to learn, be entertained. And as well, like I said, if you've got content, there might be a home for what you've got going on, too. I mean, in one of the videos...
So it sounds like, Brian, we're almost out of time with this half hour, that ultimately PowerTube could be the beginning of a set of channels, like your own multi-channel bundle that deals with all those other things. And I'm wondering if that is, in fact, the aim of your company. And also, any thoughts about perhaps becoming a member of the Independent Streaming Alliance, who's one of the members from Reverie was on our program last half hour?
We haven't spent too much time discussing that. We've been too busy building this out. But I will tell you that we already have built out what you're talking about. If you go to Watch PowerTube TV or watchpttv.com, watchpttv.com, and go there, we have a main channel, which is PowerTube TV. If you go below, you can click on any of the shows. Each one of those shows has an independent channel for themselves. Those channels have their own ecosystems where we give them, they can sell their merchandise. They have sweepstakes giveaways. They have downloads for video rental, everything like that. So, yes, we are already a multi-channel deal. We could turn on any of those channels at any particular time right now and put them on Roku right below. So you'll have your main PowerTube TV. Right? And then you'll have Liz Stomp the Loud Pedal. You can have Pastime. You can have Racing Mason. You could have this. So we're working on that, and depending on how we feel from there. Right now, the idea is we want to drive people to our main streaming network because that brings them into the ecosystem and brings them into the community. So we've used the main PowerTube TV channel on Roku and the rest of them. And if you like what you see, come on over to watchpowertubetv.com and check out all the great channels that are available from there. Because once you're in our ecosystem, we could give you more chances to get involved, and we just want everybody involved in the community.
And again, if you want to find out more about PowerTube TV, which now is available on the Roku channel, on Android operating system television sets, Apple TV, Samsung Smart TV, other places to come. Here's where you go online. It's www.watchpttv.com. It's www.watchpttv.com. Power 2 Television, now running on some Smart TV sets, devices, and multi-channel bundles, others to come, not so far down the road. Yes, pun intended. Brian Bustone, thank you very much for joining us. Congratulations on the launch of your service. I have a hunch we will be hearing you and your service a lot more in the days and months ahead. It's been a very, very happy experience having you on.
Thank you so much for your time today. Have a great day.
You too, Brian. All the greatest. Take care.
Bye now.
Brian Bustone joining us live from Port St. Lucie, Florida. Now time for the answer to our classic trivia question we have been posing over the last week or so. The question was, who played Gidget on The New Gidget? That's the 1986-88 syndicated series. Again, who played Gidget on The New Gidget? And the answer is Karen Richman. That's C-A-R-Y-N, Richman. And by the way, her father was played by someone who was known for playing fathers on television, like on The Patty Duke Show, the great actor William Schaller. Karen Richman, that's The New Gidget, who played Gidget. Sorry that we didn't get a winner. But coming up in a moment, after the bottom of the hour, we have a brand new question for you, and we now have two prizes in play. So if you're looking for an Uber card from AMC Networks and a wonderful CD, well, we have just the question for you, so stay tuned. Also, we will have a commentary about where we stand with the Writers Guild and the Acting Guild strikes and what it's time to do now. Plus, we will remember a wonderful weathercaster here in New York who suddenly passed away yesterday. Her name is Elise Finch. She was a terrific talent, and she was really out to become a star in New York and maybe beyond. More about Elise Finch and our classic trivia question and our commentary. That's all coming up in the half hour ahead, and it starts as we pause after the bottom of the hour for web identification. This is www.blogtalkradio.com, speaker.com, tune.com, together reaching over 90 million listeners around the world every month and growing. Don't forget The Rink Podcast. That's The Rink Podcast, a very different kind of sports show. And it happens your way tomorrow, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. It's a hockey podcast, and the topic for this episode, the summer hockey season. Yes, there is life in hockey after the Stanley Cup Finals. The Rink Podcast tomorrow, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, exclusively on Blog Talk Radio. And remember, Best Beach are always your way 24-7 at YouTube.com. More and more on smart TV sets, bundles, and other great devices. Welcome back to our final half hour of Tomorrow Be Televised. Tom Knapp, I'm with you live from New York, 88 degrees the bottom of the hour. Those of you just joining us, we're happy you are. And we have some more things to do for you, and we still want to hear from you, so give us a call, especially if you've been with us all along. Love to hear what you thought about our guests and what they're up to. So make the call happen, 646-652-2906. Or use our chat room, Simon Apple 04 by name. Rick Webb, our super fan from Philadelphia, is still in the room. So it's Seth Northwest Media, another one of our wonderful chat room super fans. Now it's time for our new classic trivia question. A moment ago we gave you the answer to the past one. It was Karen Richman, that's C-A-R-Y-N, who played Gidget on The New Gidget syndicated series from Columbia Pictures Television from 1986 to 1988. Well, now it's time for our brand new classic trivia question, and now we have two prizes in play. Once again, we have an Uber card courtesy of AMC Networks, and now we add a Chicago Greatest Hits CD with wonderful tunes like If You Leave Me Now and Saturday in the Park and Feeling Stronger Every Day and 25 to 6 to 4 and other wonderful hits. And both prizes can be yours if you know the answer to the following question. Back in the early 1950s, one of the first stars of dramatic television was a man named Reed Hadley, H-A-D-L-E-Y. Quite tall, had a very demanding presence. He had that voice of authority here on radio and in motion pictures before television. Great, one of the great narrative voices of all time. And he was the star of not one, but two popular drama series in the early 1950s. And that's our question. Name one of the two 1950s drama series starring Reed Hadley. Name one of the two 1950s drama series starring Reed Hadley. And both of those series are available on YouTube. If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Remember to enclose your name and where you're emailing from. First, with the correct answer, you win. If we don't get a winner by the end of today, we'll post the question tomorrow morning. That's Tuesday morning on Facebook and Twitter. Facebook is Simon Applebaum, and Twitter is UBC Simon, TWBT. Once again, the question, name one of two 1950s drama series starring Reed Hadley. And both of them are available for you to watch now on YouTube. SimonApple04@yahoo.com. SimonApple04@yahoo.com. In order to win, you got to play in. Do so. Use your TV trivia smarts today. And all the very best. In a moment, we'll have a comment about where we stand with the strikes, the Screen Actors Guild, AFTRA, and the Writers Guild of America strikes. And in this person's personal opinion, it is time to get both guilds dealing again. And what it's going to take to do that. But first, we have a tribute and a celebration. A few weeks ago, we noted the passing at the century mark of one of the first great weather forecasters on television, first local, then national, Dr. Frank Field. He got his start in the late 1950s on what was WRCA-TV, now WNBC-TV Channel 4. He was there for a quarter of a century. Along the way, he became a national celebrity thanks to Johnny Carson, the host of Tonight Show, ribbing him as NBC's crack meteorologist. He was much more than just a meteorologist, it turned out. He also was a great health and science reporter, groundbreaking in a lot of ways. And in a way, so was Elise Finch, who passed away suddenly yesterday at the age of 51. Elise Finch started her career after graduating from Syracuse University with a degree in broadcast journalism and other things too, as a production person behind the scenes in the long-running syndicated show Still Around, Entertainment Tonight, which is here in the New York area, present on Channel 2. Then she got involved as a weekend weathercaster and reporter at various television stations around the country. And then in 2007, she joined WCBS-TV first as the weekend weathercaster, and then in more recent years as the morning forecaster. Now, when Frank Field was doing his weather, there was no such thing as morning newscasts or even weekend newscasts. Maybe there was like 15 minutes on a Saturday or Sunday night on a local television station. And in the morning, it might be a five-minute or one-minute news brief given by an off-camera announcer, where the weather would be the last thing. Like, today is this, tomorrow is blank, and so on. Well, Elise Finch made the most of her opportunity, and she became a really marvelous person and marvelous presence at WCBS-TV, first weekends and then morning. She always gave the weathercast with competent information, great presence, great ability, had her, you know, appeal down pat, and she was more than just a weathercaster in a studio. When it came time to cover blizzards, heavy-duty snowstorms, hot, humid weather, flooding conditions, she was out there, sometimes for hours on end, reporting the story, reporting it accurately and fairly and to the point. And because of her Entertainment Tonight experience, she was much more than just a weathercaster. She was also an entertainment reporter. When Channel 2 started a 9 o'clock, 9 a.m. newscast, as well as other newscasts during the day, Elise was used not only to give the weather, but also to do entertainment reporting. She interviewed a lot of stars, and particularly music stars. You should also know that she was a big, and I mean a big, huge Janet Jackson fan. So enamored was she of music that when commercial breaks were happening, in the morning newscast, which ran from 5 o'clock to 7 or 4 a.m. to 7 a.m. Eastern time, local time, she would encourage that music be played in the studio during commercial breaks. And in the next to last break, out of that break, the folks would play a song, usually a pop song, that would lead into the next to last segment around 6:50 or so a.m. local time of the CBS 2 News morning cast. Elise, over her time at Channel 2, had a great reputation. She also became an ambassador for the station, going to all sorts of special events, including in her home city of Mount Vernon, New York. She leaves behind a wonderful husband who also works at WCBS-TV as a photojournalist or journalist, and also a wonderful child that they raised together. Again, Elise Finch passed away suddenly yesterday. And you could tell watching the newscast at 6:30 and 11 o'clock how much Channel 2's news people really cared. Jessica Moore, who is their weekend anchor person, could not do the 11 o'clock newscast because she was so overwhelmed by having to break the news on the 6:30 newscast. And you could hear her voice choke up as the camera panned from pictures of Elise doing her thing to a in memoriam shot. In fact, it was Ali Balmer, who was one of their really terrific reporters. She really became a star reporter at the WCBS-TV, and I think a star anchor in the making, too, who had to do the 11 o'clock cast last night. And this morning, with Mary Calvi and Cindy Hsu, two people who at least worked with a lot on the morning newscast these last couple of years, you could tell there was a very tough time to get through that newscast this morning. They did several segments on her. They did a segment on, I believe, the 9 a.m. newscast as well. And before WCBS went to CBS Mornings at the top of the hour, 7 a.m. Eastern time, they decided in her tribute to do a final live shot of the New York metro area without any sound, and to do that in her honor. It was a very wonderful tribute. Elise Finch was only 51 when she suddenly passed away yesterday in a local hospital. We don't know, by the way, what caused the situation. We may never know. That's not important. What is important to know is that Elise Finch was someone who became a real team player and a great player at WCBS-TV in New York. She made the most, like Dr. Frank Thiel did back in the late 1950s, she made the most of her shot in New York and did a great, great job, and was one of the really standout people in New York television. Elise Finch, as was beautifully said yesterday and earlier today, she will be very missed. Or as her wonderful, marvelous idol Janet Jackson said, miss you much. She sure will. And now, a comment. We've heard a lot in this program last week and certainly today about the impact of the strikes with the Writers Guild of America and the Screen Actors Guild and AFTRA on television. The writer's strike is now in its third month. Screen Actors Guild broke on strike last Thursday, now in day five. And I've had the chance over the last weekend, this past weekend, to really clear my head and really think about where we are at with this strike, these two strikes, and what's going to happen if we don't get things back on track soon, starting now. First point, no matter what you hear, there is one issue that is really taken these guilds over the cliff with the Alliance of Motion Picture and TV Producers, and that is artificial intelligence. And the irony is that it's artificial intelligence that is allowing you, the viewers, watching on smart TV sets and smart device and multi-channel bundles to watch and use the set with your voice, to call up product information from an advertiser or someone you see on the air with your voice remote, with your body language. It's giving you the ability to play games on the television set using your voice or a voice remote or a joystick that you point at the set. Artificial intelligence is allowing that to happen. It has become the main trigger point of interactive television finally happening and happening in a big and bigger way. And as you heard Damian Pelliccioni say, it is the situation that is getting people out of their minds. The fear that, as I've mentioned before in this program, that they will become obsolete, even though it is also very clear that artificial intelligence is going to play a major role, not only in how we watch and use television, also how content is created and produced for television. And there is a lot of good that can come from that, and there is a lot of craziness. And I totally get what Fran Drescher is saying, as she did on Thursday afternoon at press conference, that if we're not careful, AI, artificial intelligence, could be a disaster for television and a disaster for people who work in television, that they will become obsolete. And it is that fear that is driving this strike more than any other issue. And you get the sense that if parameters can be placed between the Alliance of Motion Picture and TV Producers and the Screen Actors Guild and AFTRA and the Writers Guild, that the rest of the issues, like dominoes, will line up and we'll get a deal. Point one. Point two. The Alliance of Motion Picture and TV Producers have done a lousy, pathetic, promotional job in public relations to get their side of the story out. They have made every wrong move possible. And it seems that they are forgetting one of the big golden rules of public relations 101. And the golden rule is this. When a situation breaks out, you don't stay silent on it. You get ahead of the issue. You acknowledge the issue. You acknowledge where you stand on the issue. And you do it in public. That's how Johnson & Johnson was able to deal decades ago with the Tylenol controversy, which could have screwed them permanently. Instead, what the alliance has done is stay silent, not appear on programs like this, or on national newscasts, or on the Sunday morning talk shows, as Barry Diller did yesterday with Face the Nation, and basically fall behind talking points. It is amazing that when the Screen Actors Guild and AFTRA did their strike vote, then had their press conference, that the alliance did not have their own press conference to rebut and advance their situation. This is ending up to be a case in point of how you don't deal with an issue in public. The public relations effort by the Alliance of Motion Picture and TV Producers is pathetic. They are getting terrible advice. And despite numerous invitations by this program and other places to welcome them in and get their story out, they have said no, 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 no. It's a gigantic boo-boo. And that is why they are being the villains. To anyone who cares about the situation, they are being looked at as the villains in the story. Point three, the Bob Iger interview from CNBC, probably one of the best interviews that's been done by a media person, by a reporter in a long time. Kudos to David Faber for it. And kudos to David Faber for bringing up the opportunity for Iger to respond with the strike situation. And his, unfortunately, he didn't take advantage of it, because there's another problem with the alliance. There doesn't seem to be empathy for the writers and the actors. Bob Iger may be right in terms of the consequences. However, what he didn't have in that answer, which he gave Thursday morning to Faber from Sun Valley, Idaho, where the media moguls were at a lot of last week and the weekend, was empathy toward the writers and the actors. And that's why Fran Drescher just pounced on him and his comments. There was no empathy. None. You got to appreciate what these people are going through. And we're not talking about the people that make the millions and zillions, the stars are right. We're talking about the writers and actors who don't get the jobs in television, who have to go paycheck to paycheck, who have to go to all sorts of auditions and get rejected over and over and over and over and over again. And if he had given one whit of empathy in that interview, maybe, just maybe, it might give the alliance more of a ability to be more public. And that leads me to the big point. And it's this. You can have all the rhetoric, all the name calling, all the side calling, all the picketing you want. It's not going to resolve the issue. No way, no how. What will resolve this issue? What will get these strikes out of these strikes? The mature people in the room speaking up and urging everyone to get back to the bargaining table. Everybody together, back to the bargaining table. This is the time for the mature adults in the room, if you will, to get out of the room, get public, and urge everyone to get back and deal. It's when you deal, you negotiate, that you can get somewhere. Not in a picket line, not with rhetoric, not with they're wrong, he's wrong, she's wrong, that's, you know. Or what was us with AI? And it's time for a federal mediator also to be part of this. And incidentally, we still haven't heard from that federal mediator who worked on that last day of the Screen Actors AFTRA negotiations with the alliance. We'd like to hear from that person, he or she. What's going on here? How about you coming back to the table and making that call? It is time for the mature adults in the room to have everybody back at a negotiating table, lock that door, order the Grubhub and the Seamless and the DoorDash, if you will, and let's get a deal. When people talk to each other, common ground can come to light, and we can work this out. I refuse to believe that artificial intelligence is a situation where we can't get parameters. The Directors Guild of America, whatever you think of the deal, got parameters. And now it's time for everyone else, because I got news for you. If these two strikes are not resolved by the end of this month, you can kiss scripted television goodbye on the broadcasting cable networks. You can also open up the door for independent TV producers to make their deals, like what The Chosen did with the Screen Actors Guild, to make sure that their fourth season continues in production, ultimately goes all over the place, including the CW and Netflix and so on. And I promise you that there will be more of this. It's time to go back to the table and make a deal happen. Everybody, all parties, mediator included, back to the table. Back to setting the future for these guilds and for us, the American public, who watch television. And the time for the mature adults to start yapping is now. Now. What do you think? I'd like to hear from you. Email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. We have a couple more minutes to go. Love to hear from you. You can also give us a call right now, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. Or use the chat room, simonapple04 by name. I want to remind you that we will have two more episodes of Tomorrow Be Televised this week. One will be on Thursday, the other Friday, both starting at the same hour, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific. And coming your way on Friday, we'll have the creator, writer, executive producer of a television series that's already been produced. It's a dramedy, scripted series called Mother, May I Have a Kidney? And all they're waiting for is a network to take them. We will have the creator, executive producer, and writer of that series, Veronica Reyes Howe. She'll be with us as one of our guests. And I want to remind you also about our classic trivia question. Right now, we have two prizes in play, the Uber card from AMC Networks, and the Chicago Best Of CD, which has great tunes like Feeling Stronger Every Day, Baby What a Big Surprise, Does Everybody Know What Time It Is, Song for You, If You Leave Me Now, and others. And again, here's the question. Name one of two 1950s drama series starring Reed Hadley. It's R-E-E-D-H-A-D-L-E-Y. And you can see episodes of both in great shape on YouTube. Name one of two 1950s drama series starring Reed Hadley. Only need one of the two. And the prize can be yours, or prizes can be yours. So email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com, simonapple04@yahoo.com. Enclose your name and your mailing address. If you are a previous winner or a guest on this program, you are not eligible. Don't get a winner by the end of today. We'll post the question tomorrow morning on Facebook and Twitter, Facebook at Simon Applebaum, and Twitter at UBC Simon, TWBT. I want to thank all of our guests for being here today. They were all dynamite, and thanks to all of you for tuning in again. If you want to find out more about Justified City Primeval, which begins its season tomorrow night, 10 p.m. Eastern Time on FX, go to www.fxnetworks.com. For more details about the Independent Streaming Alliance, go to independentstreamingalliance.com or revry.tv. And for more details about Power Tube Television, www.watchpttv.com. Again, next episode, Thursday, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific, Friday, same hour, and our guest, one of our guests will be Veronica Reyes Howe, the creator, writer, executive producer of the new dramedy In Search of a Network to Get It On, Mother, May I Have a Kidney. If you came in late on today's episode and you want to catch up on episodes you missed, just go right to our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. That's blogtalkradio.com/televised. And while you're at it, check out our podcasts. They're available 24/7 on more than 20 podcast platforms, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, Odyssey, formerly CBS Radio and Intercom. We also have the iRadio Podcast Network, and we have newer services like ListenNotes.com, RadioPublic.com, Fathom, etc. And we have our website from the folks at On Podium. It's tomorrowbetelevised.com. tomorrowbetelevised.com. And if you have a question about the world of television and want us to answer on this program, go to the question box. It's usually on the home screen, and put your question in. If I get it and we use it on the air, you, of course, will get the credit. And you can also email me at simonapple04@yahoo.com with our ongoing feature, A Show to Know. If there's a TV show you like that deserves more attention than it's getting anywhere in the U.S. of A., email me. If we use your suggestion on the air, you get the credit. simonapple04@yahoo.com. Remember, that's how you communicate with me. You can also find me on Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter. Facebook, LinkedIn, Simon Applebaum, and Twitter, UBC Simon, TWBT. However you respond to me, I respond back to you within 24 hours. That's our promise to you, because we love communicating. Don't forget, anything we handle in communication, and also, what you say matters now more than ever. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants. They are not say those of Blog Talk Radio and other distributors of this program. Andy Toe is Blog Talk Radio's general manager. Dave Sonnenberg is head of content. Website service provided by On Podium, the Internet's great podcast outpost. Guitarist Bacus is our web coordinator. For Tomorrow Be Televised, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for your listening. Have a wonderful rest of your Monday and week. If you're in an area which is really, really hot, that's around the southeast, southwest, et cetera, please be careful. Take your time. If you are traveling somewhere, check with your airline carrier before you get out to that airport. A lot of flights are getting delayed and canceled all over the USA because of the weather, so please take your time. And we'll be back with you on Thursday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, you know where, Blog Talk Radio, Speaker Tuner Radio, and all of our podcasts and web destinations. Whatever you're doing to now and then, please make it safe, and more than ever, make it great for you and others you love. Until the next time, stay well and stay tuned.